Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do a podcast. Yeah. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, August 6th, 2017. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. Not unlike the decision I made to get McDonald's last night after a show. It wasn't good. They got the order wrong. I like double cheeseburgers. And now that they have these fucking McDoubles that they've added, like, I don't know, like maybe 5 or 6. I don't even know how long it's been. But they try to, it's just a double cheeseburger without the extra layer of cheese. And that extra layer of cheese is a fuck, there's a difference. Because it doesn't taste as good. And when a McDonald's double cheeseburger is on and it's good, it's on and it's great. So they took, there was a secret that you could do when if you wanted your burger to be fresh or your food, whatever it was you ordered to be fresh, you could get like, I would say like, oh, extra pickles and onions. So they would have to kind of make your shit fresh. And so you would do that. And I specifically said, I want a double cheeseburger, not the McDouble. I want all the cheese. Cause if you get a McDouble, it's cheaper and they take away the layer of cheese. I get home, they enjoy my burger. No, they didn't have. So I was disappointed in that. Not only if I'm going to make a fat boy mistake, I want that mistake to be worth it, you know? What's that song? When you go and you know that my perfect mistake. Who sings that song? Perfect mistake. When you go and you know and you know. It's not 311. No. 311, perfect mistake. When you go, when you, I wish there was something that could emulate. Not, I don't know, that could. McLean says, I don't fucking know what it was. But if you know, tweet at me and let me know what that song was. I just know she says, favorite mistake. You're my favorite mistake. That's what it is. I feel like Google can hear me because I'm typing this in. Sheryl Crow. That's it. That's what it is. My favorite, you are my favorite mistake, whatever. All right. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 232. There's no guests. There's just me. It's just me sitting here on my couch flying solo. I've got NBA TV on. It's a throwback game. It's an NBA classic game. It's when is this from? This is the Phoenix Suns at the San Antonio Spurs. But what year is it? They're not saying. David Robinson explodes with 41 points and 21 rebounds to lift San Antonio to victory. Is it just a random? It just seems like all of these games have been 1993 from this weekend, but they're not showing what year that was. I did see Danny Manning on the court. Charles Barkley's on the court for the Suns. Kevin Johnson, future mayor Kevin Johnson, who was a little bit molesty. Who was on the show that was it Kasim Bentley that was on the show and we were talking about that? Damn, is that Rick Mahorn? No, that's not Rick Mahorn. He never played. Is that Buck Williams? I don't know who that is. Yeah, so that's on mute right now. That's on mute right now. When I recorded a premium episode. I just got done recording a premium episode. If you are listening to this right as you're listening to this, there's an episode, there's an indie movie corner with me talking about the movie Columbus. I told you guys that I was going to go see it. I made it happen. I saw it, went to a Q&A, posted some pics on Instagram, and you got a premium episode. It's an hour and 10 minutes of me nerding out about an independent film. So that's what the deal is. That's when you go over to the Patreon, you can get like exclusive episodes, exclusive content. I know everybody's got a movie podcast. Everybody got one of them jumps, but it ain't with me on that jump. So I would say now, you know, this podcast universe, if you're part of the Black Guy Who Tips, Medium Popcorn, Three Guys On, Where's My 40 Acres, that whole universe. I know everybody's doing different things. Everybody's doing similar kind of everybody doing their own thing, and it's all beautiful. If you want to rock with me, get over to that Patreon page. It's just $3 a month, and you get me nerding out about some shit. I'm nerding out about Columbus, a movie that I really, really enjoyed. So that's over there. It's even got a theme song. It's got a new theme song that you've never heard before. And it's pretty dope, man. So I hope you spend some time over there and spend your time. And I'm going to give you some good shit. Avery Johnson. David Robinson. I'll pass the ball to David Robinson. Not a really very good impressionist. Avery Johnson. Who does Avery Johnson? I don't even know. I don't even remember. I'm not going to try to. So, yeah. So the Patreon page, get on that, young. I got some good stuff over there. It's a start of something new. You know what I'm saying? When everything is young, fresh, and new. When everything is young, fresh, and new. Shout out to Little Brother. Shout out to Fonte. Shout out to Big Pooh. Shout out to Ninth Wonder. You know what I'm saying? We got, come on, man. New shit happening over on the Patreon page. Get in on the ground floor. I mean, that's all I can say. Shout out to Victor and Dre, my two Patreon members. I appreciate y'all, man. We got stuff going over there, young. All right. So like I said, solo joint sitting here. Comedy was really fun this week. I got to do some shows. So this past Thursday, I started a mini residency at on the show called Fresh Out at UCB Theater East down in the Village. And Thursday night, for the next two Thursdays now, I'm going to be doing a set there like 10 minutes at UCB and working on the shit that I was honing at the Creek in the Cave. So you're going to get some fresh, beefed up jokes, bulky jokes, sans steroids, no additives, no preservatives, just straight up jokes, strong ass jokes. It's just the real shit. None of the artificial, like plant-based jokes, just meat. The homie D Lemon, if you listen to In the Conversation podcast, he was talking about going vegan for a couple weeks, and he was talking about these Beyond Burgers and how like it's like you go get these plant based burgers, and he was talking about how they taste, and he said they don't really. So I don't know. I'm going to try it because he mentioned it. And every now and then I like to do what I usually do is do like the Boca burgers when I just want something that has like, I don't even know, like a, what do you call it? Like a taste or a proteiny, but not too heavy. You get like some Boca burgers. Or now they have the crumbles. You get some Boca burgers, you chop them up, or you get the crumbles, you season it, and then you get some green peppers, onions, mushrooms, and you kind of making like a cheesesteak, but with Boca burgers. And then you put it in between a couple slices of bread and like bread or bun, and you make like your little sandwich. And that's what I've been doing. But I've never tried I've tried the Boca burgers, but I've never tried like these Beyond burgers that are supposed to taste like a burger. And I look at these videos, and sometimes vegans, I dated a girl that was a vegan briefly for like a short period of time. And she wasn't an asshole about it. She's like it's actually a fucking sweetheart that, whatever. It just didn't work out between me and her. But she was just like, the first time we went out, she's like, oh, you know, I just should tell you. Because I was like, what about this restaurant? Does this look cool? You want to just meet here? And she's like, you know, I want to tell you, like, I'm a vegan. I don't normally tell people off the jump, but this is, you know. And I was like, oh, so... You know, she was just like cool about it. And then she did mention why she didn't eat meat. And she wasn't an asshole about it. But some people, like I went to look at like these YouTube videos of these Beyond Burgers and the people that were eating them. Some of them seemed like pretentious assholes. And like, you know, like I was in Whole Foods. It was a cute. There was a cute black girl. She wasn't really, and fuck it, she wasn't an asshole, but she was just kind of like, you know, people that eat burgers, you know, I don't eat them, but, you know, I just thought I would try it. And she's like, it's good. I mean, it tastes like a burger. It's like, how do you know? Do you remember? Do you remember what a beef burger tastes like in your mouth? I bet you don't remember. Like, I'm wondering, do you actually remember what it tastes like? And I don't know that they say all this plant-based stuff is going to taste like a real burger. Because if it's like a real, if you're saying it's like, just don't eat a burger. You know, why are you pretending? Why do they have this thing called like the Impossible Burger that comes, that like when you smash it down or when you're cooking it, it's like, this fake blood comes out. You know, why do you need that? If you're just going to eat a vegan burger, just eat the vegan, just eat vegan, or don't eat a burger. Maybe you want like that consistency, like a portobello. I get it. I'm not enlightened, and I'm going to die sooner than those people in those videos. But I don't know, man, like, you don't have to be an asshole about it. Like I mentioned, I just mentioned a girl that I dated. She wasn't an asshole about it. It was just like, I mean, if you're going to eat a burger, if you want something like it, you can get it. But I mean, you know, I don't know. It just felt weird. And then sometimes these people in videos, like to hit a homie D Lemon talk about it. It's like, should I even try this? Because I was in Stop and Shop, and I wasn't even expecting them to have it, because normally they'll just have those like those Morningside patties or Boca or something else, and they had like these. Let me look it up. Like these Beyond Burgers that I bought. I bought two, a pack of two, and I put it in the freezer. I haven't tried it yet, but I kind of just want to try that. Kind of just want to try the one that it looks like when you go to get burgers, like in the meat section, like they're packaged like fresh burgers. And they even talk about, this is what I didn't like about it. And I'm not trying to shit. This is what I didn't like about it. Like you said, oh, I've actually tricked people with these burgers. Like my family and friends, I tricked them with it. Like, I don't know. Can you really trick? Like, you can taste that and be like, yo, is this really like, this tastes different. Now, I've had like bison burgers. That's different. It tastes like the texture. It tastes different. But one day, see, part of me is like, do I want to go? You can only find these Impossible Burgers at certain places. And Bear Burger has them. And I've been to Bear Burger. I wasn't that much of a fan of the regular Bear Burger. It was all right, but it was too expensive. It was super expensive. They have these Impossible Burgers. And there's one that just opened not too long ago. There's one in Bergen County. And I might, like, but let me see how much it costs. I want to see how much it costs. And then I'll just be mad that if it's whack, I might be mad that I spent, let's see how much this shit costs, that I spent this money and it's like I got a whack burger. Let me see where the menu is. Why do they make this stuff so hard? Like, you go to a website and you're trying to find the menu and you got to go through all this rigmarole just to find the menu. Gosh darn it. What do they call this? Oh my God. Can you just give me the menu? Why is it so hard? Am I dumb? Are people eats catering? Oh my. Okay. Close to New Jersey. I don't want directions. I know where it is. I don't want to order online, but see, this is. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I don't fucking believe. Okay, I'm back. I had to go back and Google the menu specifically just to find this. They shouldn't make this shit so hard. Okay. All right, so I want to see. They don't show you how much it costs. Of course they don't. Now I don't even see the. I'm trying to find the. Okay. They just show you the calories. Substitute bison for beef on any burger. American. Buckaroo, Blazing Cattle, Farmstead. Sweet potato round. They got a sweet potato and wild rice patty, green hummus, tomatoes, baby kale. Okay. But where's the Impossible Burger? Oh my God. This is the worst. This really chaps my ass. I had a buddy in grad school. He was from Texas and he got mad. He was like, and he was just really like sincere about his anger. He was like, really chaps my ass, man. I just thought that was so funny. Oh my God, why does it? You know what? I'm just gonna Impossible Burger cost. I tried the bloody vegan burger. Cost of the Impossible Burger. It's probably going to take to cost like $15. The Impossible Burger is $16 and is served in the bar and lounge after 7:30 p.m. daily. Limited quantity is available on a walk-in basis. That's at some restaurant in San Francisco. San Francisco is the most expensive city in the U.S., I think. I know that at Bear Burger. Let's see if I can do that at Bear Burger. I should read this to you at the with the their mission statement or some shit. Meat-free Impossible Burgers locations. $13.95. Okay. A meat-free burger edges closer to the mainstream. Yeah, right. Where is their I'm gonna see this. Now I'm down a rabbit hole. Gotta get D Lemon back on the show. Let's see what we got. Since you're taking the time to read about burgers on a website, we're going to assume that you really like burgers. We do too. Get ready to sink your teeth into all the juicy details about the Impossible Burger. And looking at these patties, they look like just regular burger patties. The burger formerly known as Plants. Remember the best burger you've ever eaten? Our dedicated team of top scientists, farmers, and chefs spent the last 5 years studying it from cow to bun. Then we identified methods and ingredients to naturally recreate everything. The sights, the sounds, aromas, textures, and flavors. The result? This impossibly delicious game changer of a burger. Because we use 0% cows, the Impossible Burger uses a fraction of the Earth's natural resources. Compared to cows, the Impossible Burger uses 95% less land, 74% less water, and creates 87% greenhouse gas emissions. I wonder how much farts it produces. And it's 100% free of hormones, antibiotics, and artificial ingredients, which probably leads to 100% no taste. One thing, like looking at them cook this joint, that shit looks good. And these people are eating it, and they're looking like they're having a good time. I did text Damien about it, and I was, we were just texting. I was like, how does it taste? He's like, yeah, just cook it for a couple minutes. He was like very specific about, he said, get a Martin's potato roll and you put a lot of ketchup on it. Just to like drown out the taste. And when he was talking about it on the show, he said it smelled, it was a weird smell, and it smelled like cat food. If you listen to their latest episode, if you're not listening to that podcast, I don't know what the fuck you're doing. In the conversation with Damien Lemon and Ali Muhammad, both friends of the pod. So yeah, I'm gonna try it. I'm gonna try these that I bought, and maybe probably sometime this week. And I kind of want to check out the ones that are a little fresher, and then maybe one day I'll. It's just so hard. It's just like, if it's whack, I'll just go somewhere else to eat something. It's not like it's going to be the last. I'm a fucking arrogant asshole. That's just me being an asshole. I'm not going to eat again. If it's not good, it's just not going to be good. I just would just say about Bear Burger, I wasn't as impressed as I thought I would be for them to be to sice. You know, they siced everything on their website, and then I finally go there and it's just kind of like mediocre. And a little overpriced, where you could go to Fuddruckers, you spend like $15-$16 on burger, fries, and a drink, and you could spend less than that. I just get the big ass burger, but yet and still, like, that joint, it tastes great. Shake Shack, mad consistent, fire. But then again, we're talking about real burgers. And then like these, I have a friend that's like one of my closest friend who's like, since first grade, he's a vegetarian, and I think he eats fish. He's a pescatarian, I guess. He's never a douche about it, but he will say, eating that fucking Popeyes and all that shit. Sometimes he'll come out like and say, it's not for our people, and he's right. But at the same, he's right, but you don't want to listen to him. You know he's right. You know he shouldn't be eating that shit. Like, Deion Cole, stop eating that shit. You know what it tastes like. Stop eating that shit. You know what it tastes like. Watching people on YouTube videos, like sometimes they give you this really great insight for whatever it is. Like, I'm growing a beard right now, and I would just say, if my parents saw me, they would probably disown me. It's not like my beard is messed up, but it's just, I'm trying something different. I was upset because I went to this audition, and I can say it now. I auditioned for Gotham to play a cop. Now, this was a lot like the audition that I had to play a former football player, where I was like, I might have a shot because there's two roles. And then maybe I can get the guy that says one or two lines, or maybe I get the other guy. But I just was outmatched. I told you about the guy that looked like fucking Michael Strahan, and then another dude that looked like an offensive lineman or some shit. And that looked like a real offensive lineman, and they probably got the role. This one was, I feel like it was tailor-made for me, where I play a big guy, an overweight dude, a big fucking dude, and I play a cop with a baby face, and he's a teddy bear. I'm a teddy bear, guys. you know? And I was like, I got this shit. But I wasn't like arrogant about it. They said, okay, we want you to shave your beard and mustache, be clean shaven. And part of me was like, you know, okay, I'll do it because I want to be on a TV show. And I play a cop, and I'm like, freeze, like to a young Bruce Wayne or some shit. And I say, freeze, spoiler alert. And so I go do the audition, and it's fine. And I don't get the fucking part. And now I'm look like a fucking weirdo without my facial hair. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to grow a beard. And I think I was at the point where I was trying to grow it out anyway. And then when they were like, my manager was like, yeah, we want you to cut your facial hair. And I was like, fuck. So now I'm at the point where I'm letting it grow back to see what happens. And it's, you know, it's decent. You know, I'm getting something. And I've been using this like beard cream that, what's his name? Olivier Desol, the guy that plays guitar. He's in Odyssey's band, Good Company. And I saw his beard is just fucking beautiful. It's like an amazing beard. And I was like, Jesus, this guy, that looks great. And he was talking about this Duke Cannon beard cream that he uses. And I bought some of it off of his recommendation on Instagram. And I really like it and it's good. And I'm thinking about getting the oil that goes that you can do with it and all this stuff. And I'm looking at these grooming videos. And there's this one guy, I forget his name, but he's like got this fantastic beard and he's got like a fro and the beard. It's really cool. But he like contradicts himself. Like for one, it's kind of like, it's not sad, but it's like, it was just like a window into his life that I didn't know that I was going to go into. And like, it was like heartbreaking and like, beautiful at the same time. He was like, yeah, you know, you got to think about when you're using the beard oil, you know, you can't just put anything in it, you know, like, cause when I was growing up, you know, I didn't have a father and I was just using anything that smelled good. You know, like when I was with my lady, you know, she said, oh, your beard smells good. Oh, I like this. So that's what I would use. But you know, I didn't have no daddy to tell me that I was using the wrong cream. You know, it might have smelled good, but I wasn't using the right cream because I grew up in a house with nothing but women. And that's how, and it was just kind of like, oh shit, like this is, like it's sad, but like he still figured his shit out, you know, without his fucking asshole dad that wasn't around. So it was just kind of like, and then, but the thing about it, he's got his own products, but then he's like, I don't know, it might work for you. It might not work right for somebody else. And I was like, oh my God, I want to follow and understand this black dude. But then it's like, well, which one is it? Like, what do I use? And then everybody has their own texture and whatnot. So it's kind of confusing. Cause it's not an exact science. Like cooking is a science. Like you mix these things together and you get this, you know, that's a lot easier when it comes to like dealing with the human body and biological shit. Like there's like some medicine, it's a vitamin called biotin. And like, should you use it? If you use it, this is what you do. And this is supposed to promote hair growth. Then there's videos of people contradicting another person. And it's like, fuck, oh no. And so I just used like, I just took a risk and just tried this that this musician had, and I was just like, he's cool. That was just me saying, this guy's cool, so I'll try that, and it worked. You know, I like it so far, but I don't know how big this thing's gonna get, and my coworkers are looking at me differently. When I was clean shaven, granted, I'm one of two black dudes in my department, and I'm the younger of the two, but and like when I shaved for that audition, they didn't know I had an audition, but when I shaved, I was like, and I had a haircut too and everything, because I was really trying to get that part of the fat cop. and I shaved. Like, oh my God, Chris, you look, I mean, this looks great. Have you lost weight? I mean, oh my God, I love your hair like this. I love you clean shaven. And you know, it's just a thing in the black community where you're not really supposed to trust a brother that's clean shaven. Like, you gotta have some kind of facial hair. Like, if you watch Power, and if you're up to date, and I think I might have said this on the premium episode, I might have said it somewhere. Like, watching Power, that lawyer, the black dude, like, he has facial hair, but he just looks fucking shady. He looks like an evil Bomani Jones. That's who he looks like. He looks like an evil Bo. He's got facial hair, but he doesn't look trustworthy. Cause he's got like the thing where he's got like a Three Musketeers where it's like, it's not like super curly, but it's like he's got like a where the goatee, like the goatee doesn't connect. Like the places where it's supposed to connect, it doesn't connect. And then he just looks shady, and he talks, he's just fucking shady. And if you've watched episode six and seven, but more episode seven, you see that he's kind of a piece of shit. You see he's a piece of shit, but he was egged on. And shout out to Damian Lemon again. This is a Damian Lemon heavy reference episode, but he made a prediction about a certain thing, and he was right. I got to text him and tell him about that shit. And yeah, so like it's really confusing when it comes to all this stuff, because there's people on the thread on his videos. It's like, so I got this, but then I don't know if it's working or not. And some people are like, oh, my beard's thicker than yours, dude, now. But what kind of product should I use for this? Is, you said moisture, but then like, isn't water moisture? And I was just like, fuck, man, I don't even know. But it's pretty interesting, the rabbit holes that you go down and you go through, like on YouTube, when you're just looking something up. So that was part of my Saturday. So yeah, the residency. Damn, did I even talk? So the residency at, damn, wow. The residency at Fresh Out, you can catch me this Thursday, August 10th, and on the 17th, I'll be there doing some shit, working out. Always a fun time. Solid crowds out there. Yeah, so I had a blast. And then last night, yesterday, Saturday night, I did a show, the Glass Half Full comedy show in the Vintage Lounge at Gotham Comedy Club. Probably one of my favorite shows to do, because most of the time I get to close it out, and it's a late night show. It's just late, so driving into the city is a breeze. And I looked at Google Maps, and going across the George Washington Bridge was a shit show. It was like an hour to get there when it would normally take 30 minutes. So I went down 95 through the Lincoln Tunnel and just shot right through there and got there. And it was packed, sold out show. They had a lot of guest spots on, so I could have been. It was good for me to be there on time anyway. And I got into a nerd mode where I was dumping music on my iPod. I was just like, had a hankering to listen to some Mos Def and some Roots albums. So I was just like, I was dumping them on my iPod before it was time for me to go. I was like, I gotta get the fuck out of here. But I did ride out to some Mos Def, some The Roots, Rising Down, getting in my headspace, listening to The New Danger, vibing out to that, and ready to rock the show. And the show was fun. I was working on some new stuff and just working on sharpening some shit. And it was a good time. I wish that I had more time with them, though, man. I did like 15, 16 minutes. But it was time well spent. So shout out to Dan Enfield for having me on. And yeah, it was dope, man. It was a good time. And I'm just feeling like I'm in a good space, you know, to do comedy. And I'm just I'm just having a good time, man. And I hope I can just continue to just keep working and keep plugging away all that shit that you're supposed to say. I think I have, I'm trying to see what other dates that I have. I know I got a show coming up upstate New York. So August 31st, I'm co-hosting, special guest co-host at the Slipper Room, co-hosting Medium Popcorn with Brandon Collins. And we're talking about Juice, and we're going to have a retrospective on that at the Slipper Room. It's a cool spot. August 31st at 7 p.m. And then I'm going to be there's probably going to be more shows in between time, but I'm going to be on September 28th. I'm going to be at the Falcon Underground in Marlboro, New York at 8 o'clock p.m. That's near Poughkeepsie. And that's a spot where I'm going to be doing a headliner set. So I'll be doing a long set there, and more dates to come. I'll tell you about them. I'll post stuff. And yeah, man, I'm going to be working on this material, man. So that was fun. Speaking of comedy, Dave Chappelle is doing a real residency, unlike my week at the Creek, but a real deal residency at Radio City Music Hall. And he's got like the Roots with him, Chris Rock stopping by. I saw a picture where Kevin Hart, I think, stopped by last night or something. And it's a mega thing that I can't afford. And, you know, someone had a review about his stand up on Vulture. Jesse David Fox. Dave Chappelle unsuccessfully tackles Trump and trans issues at Radio City. And he went in, so he's doing a 16-show residency. And, you know, it seems like he's just kind of maybe he's just tone deaf, and it doesn't seem that he wants to let any of his thoughts really go. I kind of have an issue with, you know, people not being there and commenting on it, but I guess that's what happens when you do a fucking review anyway. As part of me feels like you kind of got to be there to take it all in, but I can go either way on that. But it seems like with the, you know what it is, like looking at the last special, look, the Age of Spin, it just seems like some of those jokes about trans stuff, you just kind of, I think as a comedian, okay, here it goes. Quite a few people I've seen on Facebook have been mad about it. And everybody's really behind the LGBTQ community, as they should be. You should support, and you should be mindful. Your opinions should evolve. It's just like people talk about, you know, you update your phones, you know, to get the newest iOS or the newest program. You should do that with yourself and try to work on yourself and to be accepting. I don't want to say tolerant. I feel like accepting and more aware of what, because you had the Little Duval thing, the ignorance that he spewed on the Breakfast Club. You had the Bobby Valentino thing. But I will say that when it comes to this stuff, like with the Bobby Valentino and Little Duval low key being set up, and then him at the same time doubling down on his thoughts. I think that it's imperative for people to start accepting people that are different from you. Because when you start accepting these people, you get over one hump of like, okay, you're trans, you're queer, you're gay, you're whatever you are. At the core, you're still a human being, and once you get over that hump. It's kind of like, now I need to know what kind of person you are. You identify yourself as X or Y, but don't be an asshole. Don't be an asshole about it. And you have these statistics of these trans women being killed. It's a fucking horrible thing. It's murky waters, because you want to pass as if you identify yourself as a woman, you change yourself to become a woman. But I think I put myself in those shoes. If I was identified myself as a woman and I went through and I was post-op and I identified myself as a woman, I came out as a woman or whatever, and if I got into a relationship or anything of a sexual nature, I would say before we do this, I'm liking where this is going, but you got to know I used to be a dude. I used to be a man. I think that's important. I think that's the thing, because you can't. I like to think that I would do that, but there's so much like wrapped around. Like there's the safety in that. Are these people fear for their lives? So you got to have empathy that that's a hard fucking position to be in. Like you're born one way and you don't feel like that. You don't feel like the way that society, I guess, tells you where to be. I don't know. It's just fucking uncomfortable, man. And I just think the biggest thing, people just lack empathy. And I think as a comic, yeah, you can joke about anything. And it should be funny. If the key thing is funny, and we're at a sensitive place with trans issues, and you have to handle them delicately. And for somebody as elevated as probably Dave Chappelle's arguably one of the best comedians to ever do it, and it just seemed like he handled it clunkily, and then he just kind of doesn't want to get over it. And I haven't seen the set. But comedians, we can be critiqued, like we should be. But I think everybody like him, like you have to know what's going on. You have to have a pulse. You can't be out of touch. You have to know what's going on if you want to be a well-rounded comic. I'd like to think, you know, I like to have an idea of what's going on in society so I can comment on it and make it funny, and how it relates to me, how it like, and filter that through my prism in order to make it funny. You know, I'd like to, because the people that have done it, and I think that's what separated Rich. I think that's probably why Richard Pryor was the GOAT, because all of his flaws, he showed them to you. I keep going back to that quote from that book, Becoming Richard Pryor, where it's like he unzipped his brain and put it all out there. In a nutshell, I'm paraphrasing. And he said he blew a guy and he slept with a trans person, and he just wasn't fucking afraid. That vulnerability was just, it's like he didn't give a fuck. I mean, maybe he off stage, it's probably a bad person, probably the way he beat women and shit like that, but as a performer, separating the artist from the man, separating that work, it's like that's where he transcends all these other people, and it's almost that, I think that's what elevates him and makes him the greatest. I mean, like I would say he's the greatest of all time, and that's what Chappelle I don't want to compare Chappelle and Little Duval. But if you're handling these things clunkily and you're not taking, I don't know, like you can have your stance, but that shit, you kind of have to vet it. I don't know, man. It's a murky thing when you talk about it, because I just think empathy is key, and life experience is helpful too. Because when you expose yourself to different things, it just it makes you more well-rounded, and it's disappointing to hear, like, because he's obviously working his shit out, and like I can tell that he, just from the way that this is written and from the way that it comes off, is just like this person has a love for his work, but it's like, okay, this is where it's lacking. He did say, well, he made fun of, he teased the Amish people, but because you don't, Amish people, that's kind of like fair game because they're never going to hear it, or it's never going to get back to them. I'm trying to find this part where he talks about like seeing Michael Jordan. Okay, he says, here he goes. That's a huge, just kind of a chunk. Some bit about Dave Chappelle, where Dave did an impression of Morgan Freeman. If Freeman were Chappelle's penis being jerked off, this song about him getting older. It was truly fantastic. Not sure if it was enough to justify the standing ovation he received at the end. Jesus Christ, don't hate. Received at the end of the show. But I get it. In high school, when I saw Michael Jordan play in his final season, I gave him a standing ovation for the 8 points he scored. Sometimes you just want to tell a legend you love them forever and always, regardless of the night. And one thing, Dave Chappelle, what makes him great and makes him, he does have the awareness that, you know, he talks about failing. Like, he talks about, you know, I get paid for the attempt, you know, because anytime you go out there, you can lose. And like, it really hit home for me when I read Chris Rock saying something with the along the lines of, it's like a boxing match, and anytime you can lose, no matter who you are, no matter how good you are, you can fucking fail at this shit. It doesn't matter. And there's always this, for me, there's always this anxiousness, this nervousness. And then once I'm up there, I'm pretty much okay. And maybe if a joke doesn't go well, like, you can, you know, you can comment on it and make it good. Like, I was watching a comic last night. The homie Dan Enfield was working on a bit, crushing, had a good set, and he tried a new bit. And the only reason I knew it was a new bit, because he said it, and it didn't go well. And he was like, well, that's a bit that I'm never going to do again, and I'm going to take it out and shove it up my ass. And the crowd loved it because he was honest about, you know, what happened, that he didn't get the laugh. Got to get Dan on this joint, man. Got to get a lot of people on. And shout out to Alex Barnett, too, co-producer of that show, Glass Half Full, comedy show. Yeah, it's just something to think about. It's just always like just – you have that anxiety. I remember when I was doing, every time I did theater, there was this anxiousness, this nervousness, and coupled with like, I have to be here. Like, I have to say, I have to tell you the things that I'm going to tell you in during this set. Like, I'll never forget, like, talking to Carmen Lynch for the first time, like 4 years ago when she first did the show. I think it was like episode Bo Jackson, episode 34, when she was on the show. It's like, you know, you there's this need, like, you have to have this desire and this need to want to be on stage and have this thing that you want to say. Like Bill Burr even said, like, one time, like, you go, like, when you're telling a story, your friend's telling you a story at the bar, he's not thinking about all these things. He's thinking about, like that we as comics, you know, think about as we start evolving. But he was saying, like, your friend, when you're telling a story at the bar, your friend's just going to say, this happened. And you want to tell them this story. I don't know. I'm fucking up what a great comic said, but that's basically it, man. I don't know. It's disappointing that, you know, somebody that you respect and enjoy isn't coming. It's coming around. It's taking them a while to come around on some of these issues, because the more that you're accepting, and the more empathy that you have, the closer we get to the utopia of what we're meant to be as humans. I just think you get closer to the best parts of humanity. I think. It's just like the Colin Kaepernick situation, where he's being blackballed because of the things that he's kneeled for are basic fucking rights that, hey, just stop killing us. You kill all the black people, football's gonna really suck. It's going to be really fucking boring. You're not going to have any wide receivers and running backs. You're not going to have anybody at these skill positions. He's going to have, if you were really racist, you'd let, if you were really racist, you'd let Colin Kaepernick play so the game could be more fun. It's already fucking boring. Oh, I don't know. No, what are you going to do? What else? There's this really good article. It's really opinion piece in the New York Times, and I'm going to find it. I thought, you know, I do prepare for this show, and I just want to let you know, because I do prepare for it, and whenever I try to go somewhere and try to make a seamless transition, I feel like I'm not able to do that sometimes, and it really chaps my ass. Let me see. And see, now Google's being silly because I'm trying to... Oh, my God. Okay. Google's being really silly right now, and it's not... Okay, here it is. There's this piece, opinion piece, in the New York Times called The Policies of White Resentment by Carol Anderson. And Carol Anderson is a professor of African-American Studies at Emory University and the author of White Rage, The Unspoken Truth of Our Racial Divide. And it's a good read because it talks about like Trump's election, and it talks about like making America great again is really making America white again. And it's like I tried to do this bit maybe like 3 or 4 years ago where Obama, they were just really getting on Obama. It was like maybe like it was 2014, and it was just this sort of just really dogging him. And I was like, I kind of can't wait till he leaves office so you can get back this country that was always yours. You never lost it. You thought you did, but you never, the world is still your oyster. It's still in the palm of your hands. You got the world, the country by its sack. It's not going anywhere for you. You're not really losing anything. And it's just like this return to this. It's like what Larry Wilmore called it, the unblackening. And that's basically, that's what it is. And that's what he called it, because you knew that it was going to be somebody white. You knew there wasn't going to be another black candidate that was going to rise to the prominence like Obama did. And and it was good to have it written so eloquently. Can you say writing's eloquent? Written so... A well-written explanation, well-written thoughts on what's going on in this country, what's been bubbling up for the last like what 4 to 5 years or however long. And I remember just having conversations with my parents, with my dad, really just saying like, "You seem like the country's getting worse. Like racism just getting is really out there now." Even during Obama's presidency, like it just felt like it got worse. Like we started finding out more about this police brutality. Like we always knew that shit was going on, but it's just becomes more and more pervasive, you know. She's got this passage, and it's a quick read. It's not very long, but I'll read you this passage that she has in the middle of it. Like on Christmas morning, every day brings his supporters, she's talking about Trump, his supporters' presence, travel bans against Muslims, immigration and customs enforcement raids in Hispanic communities and brutal. And what? I know I'm dumb because she's smarter than me. And brutal family gutting deportations. Okay, I get it. Let's start this over. Like on Christmas morning, every day brings his supporters presents, travel bans against Muslims, immigration and customs enforcement raids in Hispanic communities, and brutal family-gutting deportations, a crackdown on sanctuary cities, an election integrity commission stacked with notorious vote suppressors, announcements of a ban on transgender personnel in the military, approval of police brutality against thugs, a denial of citizenship to immigrants who serve in the armed forces, and a renewed war on drugs that, if it is anything like the last one, will single out African Americans and Latinos, although they are not the primary drug users in the country, hence opioids, all that shit. Last week, Mr. Trump and Attorney General Jeff Sessions put the latest package under the tree. A staffing call for a case on reverse discrimination and college admissions, likely the first steps in a first step in federal assault on affirmative action and a determination to hunt for colleges and university that discriminate against white applicants. There was a piece that came out a couple of days ago that was like Harvard, like a Harvard. What? Let me see, like 20. Let me look this up. It was like a 2017 Harvard incoming students. I don't know, but was saying that most of them are like Asian or something. Harvard's incoming. Yeah, here we go. New York Post. But it wasn't. It was just. It was a thing. Like I get, and in every news outlet. Let's see. Let's look up Washington Times. The Washington Times. Harvard makes diversity history. Majority of incoming freshman class are not white. So that's a that the class of. The institution, which has made a concerted effort in recent years to become more diverse, confirmed that 50.8% of its class of 2021 are not white, are non-white. To become leaders in our diverse society, students must have the ability to work with people from different backgrounds, life experiences, and perspectives. Harvard remains committed to enrolling diverse classes of students, Harvard spokeswoman Rachel Dane said in a statement. The Boston Globe reported Thursday, Harvard's admission process considers each applicant as a whole person, and we review many factors consistent with the legal standards established by the U.S. Supreme Court. So this is, that's a great thing, man. And so now they're trying to, I guess, like curtail that or trying to get rid of that. And maybe that's at the state level. I believe Harvard is a, I think it's a private institution, I guess. College can move, admit whatever they want, and it's on the merit. If you want to listen to a good podcast, listen to Misandry with Marsha and Ray, with Marsha Belsky and Ray Sani. And they talk about, Ray was telling her story about, well, she told some of her story on when she did my show a couple of years ago, too. But she kind of goes into detail about She just touches on her getting admitted into Princeton and how her guidance counselors were kind of trying to dissuade her from enrolling. Like, what the fuck? You're not supposed to do that shit. You're your guidance counselor. You're supposed to encourage the kid. Whatever, man. So, yeah, that's a good piece. Now I got these little, I got these fucking fruit flies in my apartment. They came in when I opened the window in my apartment to, because I don't want the AC to be going while I'm doing the podcast. I'm trying to be thoughtful when it comes to you guys when you're listening. No excess noise happening. And these little fruit flies try to come in, and I just don't want my place to be stuffy. Anyway, all right. So let me go back to this. So that was good, but you should read it. She really came in with the haymaker at the end. She says, in the end, white resentment is so myopic and selfish that it cannot see that when the larger nation is thriving, whites are too. Instead, it favors policies and politicians that may make America white again, but also hobbled and weakened. A nation that has squandered its greatest assets, its people, and its democracy. Damn, that's bars right there. That's bars right there, young. And right after I posted it, I posted this on Facebook and Twitter. If something's a good read to me, I'll just set up a link and I'll say good read. And it's an opinion. And some white guy that I don't know says he's in office because the Dem screwed Bernie and Hillary was too dumb/lazy to campaign in the Midwest effectively. Hashtag forgot about Wisconsin. I'm not going to respond to the shit. Because most times people just want to have an argument. I'm posted the shit without comment and said it was a good read. I thought about not posting it. The homie Rod, and he tweets a lot, so I can't. I want to see if I can find that tweet that he did, but it was shit. You know what? I'm going to just try to find. I'm just going to scroll through his timeline and find it because it's pretty profound. But it's going to be a fucking chore because he's a prodigious tweeter. Tweets a lot. You know what I can do? You know what I'll do is I'll do this and I'll go to his Rod the Pod God. It is a really great. It was really great. Let me find. Hold on a second, guys. I found it. Okay, he says, Rod tweets, white people are only against censorship when it's time for a white person to shut the fuck up. And I believe this is in regards to the Confederate show, the HBO show that people are up in arms about. And like you said, well, let's just wait and see. You know, let's just wait and see what it's about. And then they try to bring up the laws and censorship. Like, yeah, they can do what they want. They can write and create a show however they see fit. But it's like just this fascination of what it would be, what it's like when it's like, yo, dog, you already living your best life, young. For the most part, you can do whatever you want to do. And now you want to see, you don't want people in your futuristic fantasies and in the past. And now what if slavery, you know, was still around? And like somebody said this, and I don't remember who said it, but they said something like, everything is good. White men feel like they have to be. They have to create this drama, this fear. That not all white men, but white men have to create this. Like there's this idea that they're always being threatened and attacked because that's not a reality that exists for them. So it's like, what if this shit X, Y, Z over here? What if these monsters or whatever the fuck, you know, what if this shit, you know, and when people, you know, are up in arms, when people express themselves, then they want to. That's just really profound. Yeah. When it's time for them to shut the fuck up, they don't. Some of them don't. And there's been something that's kind of been boiling in this piece. It's interesting to me because it's something that, like, for the past few months, I've had friends come, like, message me and tell me that, like, there's white men on podcasts that say, like, this low-key racist shit that's prejudiced, and people that I have respect for, people that I think are talented in their craft. And it's disheartening to hear that they're saying all this stuff. And it's like Dave Chappelle. It's tone deaf. There's no sense of empathy. And that just seems like this blatant disrespect and disregard for people. And then they somehow feel threatened because now black people and other minorities are shining or just starting to get a little bit of shine, and what they have is being threatened. And there's, as they continue, as these white men continue to excel, do well in their careers, they still feel threatened about you getting a little bit of something, you getting that slice of the devil's pie. You know what I'm saying? That D'Angelo joint, young. Fuck the slice, want the pie, why? What? Ain't no justice, just us, ash to ashes, dust. You know what I'm talking about, man. So they see that as a threat, and people are getting, like, you have, like, they have to watch us shine now. And it's scary to a lot of them. And they should be fucking scared, because more people are getting the chance. But it doesn't mean that it's going to be bad. It's going to be all bad for them. It's when you really look at it, it's hard to think this way. My brain, my thoughts and feelings are slowly starting to shift and starting to accept that for the most part, nobody's really taking your spot. Like, I think about, like, the Montreal auditions, and I think, man, I wish I, yeah. Ain't nobody really taking my spot, man. It, like, what's meant for them is meant for them. And as much as I would like to do certain things and be in certain projects, it's just not meant for me. And I have to find that and have to make peace with that shit. Not to say that it's always easy, but I've gone up for enough things to know that it ain't always about me, you know? So I've felt rejection, and I know what rejection feels like. Being in show business, that's something that's never really gonna go away, you know? So it's disheartening. It's frustrating to hear that, like, to listen to that shit, man. It's like nobody's taking your shit. But you want to keep me back and people that look like me back because you're scared and you don't want to grow. You don't want the game to grow. You don't want the art to grow. You just want to have that false sense of, I don't know what it is. It's like a sense of security? Like you got your bag, but why are you looking at my plate like that? Especially, why are you looking at my plate when you got more than I do? You know what I'm saying? You looking at my bank account and you got way more than me. Why are you worried about me? I'm just trying to get my laceration. I'm just trying to participate. And you know it's a problem when white women come up to you and express the same shit. A white woman who's some of the most privileged person in this country. I had after a show, the comic was in the lineup with me. We're walking, and she's, I'm not going to say her name, but we might get her on the show and talk about the shit. She was dropping names of these people, the same people that these brothers was coming up to me, messaging me, talking about shit. And she's like, yo, like, these people don't get it. They don't get it. And it's sad. It's a fucking problem. Cause you're gonna talk all this shit, but they wouldn't say that to me. They wouldn't say it to my friends that are coming up to me and talking to me about this, cause they're scared. Are they? If they're willing to have that dialogue, I'm willing to have it, you know. But I think there's a fear, and I think that's the business anyway. I think that's whether you're black. Part of it comes down to the human element of no matter what color you are, everybody's trying to figure this shit out. Nobody has the real answers if you're not up to a certain level. And you get people that are high up in certain levels of entertainment or whatever. It's like, I don't know. Like, these things just fell into place, and a lot of it's luck. Even the shit that I know that I'm good at, and I know, like, I don't necessarily deserve, but shit that I'm like, I'm competent enough to do this gig. That shit took luck. And just to say two fucking lines in a movie or on a TV show. So it goes, man. But I just wanted to talk about that, because I felt like it's something that's been happening. And that article was a good way to get into that. It's just something that's a problem. And I was just kind of blown away that a white woman was like, yo, this shit is fucked up and it's not cool. Like, I already knew it was not cool, but it's when you get that affirmation from somebody that you wouldn't expect, is like, oh shit. All right. So let's do. Kind of makes me think about one of my favorite artists who has one to what I believe is to be one of the best albums. My favorite album of the year, Odyssey, The Iceberg. I think it's terrific, and I've been singing his praises for years now on this show, but it just really connected with me like over the last couple months. You know, I probably said this shit last week, but I just kind of had this, you know, when I first listened to it, I was like, okay, he's doing his thing. It's straight. I don't know. But I just kept listening to it. And there's all definitely songs that I really fuck with and I really have on my playlist. And then, but just listening to it all the way through, it's like, it really connects with me now. And he's got this song called Like Really. And I don't know if this is going to be like a new segment in the show, but like I kind of did it when I was talking about whatever I was talking about a couple weeks ago when I had a fucking head cold. But I just want to read, like, I guess maybe the first verse of this, or some of it. Let's see. Just start from here. Like, how you going to make us great when we were never really that amazing? Take it back to what? I don't find hanging black lives entertaining. How you police the streets of a neighborhood you don't engage in? Why a brother get 3 for a sack while your brother go free for a raping? How you make a film about Egypt with all leading roles Caucasian? How you gonna say all lives matter when the stats say we are not adjacent? They tell me I got it. Tell me if I got it all wrong, like a sign on the line, but I didn't read the form, and the fine print is all about the times we mourn, and the color of my skin means I gotta be strong. And you hand me down the faith, said if I was reborn when I take my last breath, that you let me breathe on. And as of right now, we could never be pals. So how are we supposed to get along? This now more than ever, though, all about force and measure, though. Why am I forced to let it go? Clean your messes, though. You take your jobs to Mexico, pay us less and lesser, though. Promise to bring them back, and the problem gets the vote. Man, come on, young. Come on, young. Come on, young. That's PG, DC, DMV, dope-ass rhymes from Amir Muhammad, Odyssey, Like Really. And plus, he raps it better than me. But if you go to Rap Genius, you know, you'll get all the breakdowns and all that shit. But like, that song is really fucking powerful. It came out before the election. And it's definitely like, you know, he's got, and it kind of like, and even to bring it back a full circle to like Dave Chappelle when he hosted SNL on election night, you know, that sketch that he had with Chris Rock, and he's like, you know, like the black dudes are hanging out with white people, and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe this, but the black dudes are like, well, you know, we kind of, you know, ugh. He's got this song, one is called NNGE, Never Not Getting Enough. Probably one of my favorite records on the album. He says, the first verse, he says, first like few lines, he says, I mean, what is there to fear? I'm from Black America. This is just another year. If you're new to disrespect by your elected puppeteers, well, let me show you how to persevere. Just get up every time somebody knocks you down and celebrate in front of people like they're not around. And if they try to build a wall to keep you balling out of bounds, use the bench they told you to warm to keep the fences knocking. What the fuck? Are you kidding me, man? God, this guy is great. He says, like, so this is, go to Rap Genius and look up The Iceberg and fucking play this album, man. It's the best album of 20. You can talk about Jay-Z 444. It's really good. I've said it. I've gone on record and said it's terrific. You can talk about Kendrick Lamar till you're blue in the face. He's great. But if you want to hear some shit that's like very now, like that's like it's just it's politically aware without being preachy, and it sounds fucking great. And so just like break down some of this stuff. Like I'll do the nerd stuff. As someone from a variety of backgrounds, Odyssey isn't fazed by the current administration. Odyssey explains this in the following video from 149. It was this piece, AJ Plus. They have these like cultural videos and shit. And you can, if you go to the link, I tweeted it a couple weeks ago, but if you go to Rap Genius and you click on the Iceberg, which is Odyssey's album, and there's a record, Never Not Get Enough, which I just quoted, and you go to one of the lines, you'll see this video. Monsters is what you make of us, and we help you succeed. Rapper Odyssey on the paradox of the immigrant experience, because he is Sudanese American, his dad is Sudanese, and his mom's a black woman. And it's just fucking great. Like, I like, that's a record that I listen to. Like, that's on my playlist, and when I'm on my way to an audition, I listen to that shit. When I'm on my way to a show, that's one of those songs that I just kind of listen to, and it gets me right. Like, when I'm in New York City, like, I love New York City, but I love where I'm from, and that record just makes me feel good about being where I'm from. And in the video, which was really cool, he's with the other cat on the song is named Twan. Yeah, it's Twan. And they're shooting a video in PG County, like all over PG County, like Iverson Mall. They go get cookies from the cookie place in Iverson Mall, and that the Marlow Heights Shopping Center. Like, I used to go there all the time when I grew up and shit. So it's just, it's evocative of all these things, like my childhood and all this cool shit. But it's very, very, very relevant. And it's a powerful album. The more that I think about it, it's terrific. So that's my album of the year, guys. And I know it's just August. Other music, I listened to Cody Chestnut, My Love Divine Degree. I like Cody Chestnut. I think Cody Chestnut, if you remember him, bringing up Dave Chappelle again, the Dave Chappelle Block Party movie that came out, was that like 2004, 2005, whenever it came out, like, to me, one of the best moments of that entire film was Cody Chestnut singing at the end. And it was only for a brief period. And that was like the most poignant, powerful moment of the film, to me at least. And he's this super talented guy. A Headphone Masterpiece, his first like double album, his first debut album, I believe. And it was also a double album. Came out around 2002, 2003. And then he took some time off. But his album that came out a few years ago called Landing on 100, which is really good. Like, it's like, he's got, okay, so Headphone Masterpiece, 2002, the live release, unpublished, 2006. 2010 Black Skin No Value EP. I haven't heard that. 2012 Landing on 100. To me, like, that's my favorite of his. My Love Divine Degree, solid. I didn't really get to digest it, like I said, but it sounds good. He sounds good. So I've been listened to that yesterday. Movies, and then we'll get the fuck out of here. How much? Hour and 18. Damn, this is a good episode, young. This is a good ass episode. Movies. Let's do movies. I want to talk about Atomic Blonde. But first, I want to talk about Detroit. I have not seen this yet. But I just want to find, this is just something I find interesting about this movie. It seems like this is one of those, it's like one of those low-key obligation movies if you're black. Like, when W. Kamau Bell used to have a podcast, his Denzel Washington podcast, used to say like certain movies are like black people homework, and I agree with him to a degree. It's kind of like those history movies that you got to see. And then, you know, just from a superficial standpoint, John Boyega's in it. I'm a John Boyega fan. Anthony Mackie's in it. Catherine Bigelow's at the helm, so it's like, oh shit, I want to see this. This looks like it's gonna be dope, and the trailer looks good. And it's like, oh shit, this is gonna be intense. So this is what this movie's about. In the summer of 1967, rioting and civil unrest starts to tear apart the city of Detroit. 2 days later, a report of gunshots prompts the Detroit Police Department, the Michigan State Police, and the Michigan Army National Guard to search and seize an annex of the nearby Algiers Motel. Several policemen start to flout procedure by forcefully and viciously interrogating guests to get a confession. By the end of the night, three unarmed men are gunned down while several others are brutally beaten. And this is something I never heard of this story before. I didn't know about it. It was like a year before my parents got married, like 50 years ago. I had no clue about it. I knew about riots after King got killed and whatnot. I did not know about this, and it piqued my interest. Once again, another story involving black people, like hidden figures that I didn't know shit about. And part of that's my fault, and a lot of it's the school system. So just listening to podcasts like I normally do, and then people's reviews, like shout out to the homie Phenom Black on Twitter. You know, he made a post about like, Detroit, you know, go see Step, this documentary about these young women in a Baltimore high school doing Step and how that like helps them with their life and all that, you know, feel good shit. And I was like, yo, and then I just messaged him. I was like, yo, did you like Detroit? He was like, I don't, it's just kind of like, it's like, I wasn't feeling it. It seemed like they just made the story about the white people more than the black people. And I was like, oh, that's a red flag. I was like, oh shit. I don't know if you're trying to make these white, savior movies, man. I'm not really feeling that. I was like, damn. I was like, fuck, man. I was going to go see it. I was going, you know, go see Columbus. That was my main objective. And then maybe Sunday morning, just go, you know, go see an early matinee of Detroit, knock that out, talk about it on the podcast. But I was like, damn. So my red flag was up. I was like, all right, you know, maybe I'll see it. Maybe. And I will see this movie eventually. I might even go see it on Thursday if I got time to kill before my show. You know, supposed to kick it with a young lady. You never know how they might flake. So maybe you either get that, or you'll get, if you're a Patreon subscriber, you'll get you'll get an indie movie corner episode. You'll get two in a row. So you never know. So like, maybe I'll see that. Maybe I'll see Dark Tower, even though I know people are not really liking that movie right now, though. It's the number one movie in the country, at least as of Friday. Box Office Mojo was, as I'm recording this, they were updating their site. Now it's up. And so now we got, so it raked in 19 million. The Dark Tower, 19 million. Dunkirk, number two. Emoji Movie, number three. Girls Trip, four. Kidnap at five. Where does Columbus rank? Columbus is only in a handful of, it's only in two theaters. So it made 28 grand. All right. Number 40. Anyway, all right. So then I'm listening to a podcast that I just started listening to about to review. It's from that guy named John, and he's a friend of Tim Hall. He's based out of Seattle. He has a podcast. Probably some of the coolest intro music that I've heard on a podcast, original music. Got to tell him that when I talk to him. We're in talks. Maybe I'll appear on his show pretty soon. So I'm listening to him talk about it. And John is a white guy. From what I know, he's a white guy from Seattle. And I'm listening to him talk about it. And he's like, he was going in. Like, he just was like, yo, this is like a white savior movie. And I'm not, you know, it's like he was disappointed. And just like, I was like, damn, like he was going in. And I was like, damn, this is another time. Just a day later, when a white male is going in on a movie for being too white. Oh, wait a minute. Is he white? Hold on a second. Okay. He says he's a mixed light skin guy. Okay. Did I miss that when I? Oh shit, I missed that in the conversation. I'm not going. Oh fuck. So he's part white. And he's light skinned. He's another JL, I guess. So he was saying, so like, just basically how white film critics were saying, like, oh my God, this is beautiful. This is a beautiful movie. This is good. I mean, we need this. And I know the guy that was on the episode with him was like, I understand how you feel. But at the same time, his argument was, at the same time, people don't know about this story. And it's a story that should be told despite these negative aspects of the movie. And I kind of saw where he was coming from. But when I saw a guy that was like, yo, he was saying John was struggling with the way they were telling the story. And I was like, damn. I was like, okay. So I'm getting a black dude and a biracial dude coming at me with this. And another guy who, what is his name? Like, I don't know his name, but he's the ATZ show. I've talked about him. He's a Chicago dude. And he gives his takes on movies and whatnot. And I didn't even watch his video yet, but he was like, don't let it fool you. I was like, damn. So it's like people are going in on this movie, and it's disappointing because you think like it's going to be like, yo, Kathryn Bigelow, this shit is official. And yeah, man. So am I dreading seeing it? I'm not dreading seeing it, but it's just kind of like, it's like, I don't know, man. Like, I'm probably not going to rush to see this one. And it's disappointing because it's, you know, hashtag black actors, man. I want to talk about Atomic Blonde and get out of here and go on with my day. I've been podcasting all day. Let's see. Where the heck is it? I know I put it up. See, I'll just type it in again. All right. Okay. Atomic Blonde. Atomic Blonde. All right. Sensual and savage. Lorraine Broughton is the most elite spy in MI6, an agent who's willing to use all of her lethal skills to stay alive during an impossible mission. Impossible white girl. Impossible white man. What a white girl. Shout out to Rod. With the Berlin Wall about to fall, she travels into the heart of the city to retrieve a priceless dossier and take down a ruthless espionage ring. Once there, she teams up with an embedded station chief to navigate her way through the deadliest game of spies. This was directed by David Leitch. Music composed by Tyler Bates. Who wrote this? You see, when you try to find, they should have all this on the Google page so I don't have to sound like an idiot when I'm trying to find this stuff. And it's based on, it's written by Kurt Johnstad, and it's based on Anthony Johnston and Sam Hart's 2012 graphic novel, The Coldest City, published by Oni Press. And if you listen to John on About to Review, he breaks down like Oni Press and all this stuff. I think that's a comic book company out of Portland, Oregon. Yes, it is. And all that good stuff, man. So I like this movie. Starred African Queen Charlize Theron. She's beautiful, man. Like, you kind of forget about her sometimes. She's very striking. She's very tall. There were nude scenes, but they were tasteful. And again, this is a big shout out episode, but shout out to Rod, because he said something when he saw it along the lines of, it doesn't really show you how strong she is. Something he was saying about along that I really liked, and I can't for the life of me think, but it just showed how tough this character was. Like, if she had bruises on her, like a lot of these action movies, even male centered action movies, you know, they beat the shit out of these guys for, you know, they're fighting and they don't have a scratch on them. the first scenes that you see her getting over, like trying to recover from a brutal fight that you find out about later in the movie because it's a jump forward. There's this stairwell sequence that's the reason to go to this movie, and it's the reason you should see this movie for the stairway sequence, like the way the fights were, the camera angles. One of my coworkers was telling me about it, and he was like, before I had seen it, he was like, yeah man, I saw Atomic Blonde, and man, like it was crazy, man, the fights, you know, there were these camera angles that I'd never seen before. It was just, oh man. I was like, okay, I'm gonna go see it. So when I went to see it, I saw it at like, I think it might have been four. So there's like maybe 4 or 5 o'clock, whatever the showing was. It was playing at the Dolby theater, and with the theater where you got the crazy speakers and the sound, the seats rattle a little bit. That shit was, it cost $20. And so I was like, okay, let me get the Dolby because this is the time that I can see it. And she, I was like, how much is the Dolby? And she was like, $20. And I was like, damn. And she laughed. And I said, okay, well, I got a Stubbs card. So I got points. So let me just, you know, do that. Jesus. Let me do that. And so she kind of whispered to me. She's like, I gave you the kid's price. And so I ended up paying $11. So that was straight. I was, you know, and then that made me go get some snacks. My a bottle of water and some peanut M&Ms. So I felt better about it, where it's like, God, I hope this movie doesn't suck. And I'm in this theater where everything is like supposed to be this amazing movie experience. And and then because it was pretty cool because the gunshots, they were super loud. They were like, pow, and the seats shaked a little bit. They shook a little bit, rather. And it was fine. Like, I really enjoyed the action. There was a couple twists and turns, but it didn't make me say, oh, but I was like, okay, I fuck with it. It's entertaining. The music was really good. The music, you know, and it's got like this 80s pop music, and it was fun. I think it might have been slightly better executed than Baby Driver. I thought Baby Driver was entertaining, but the music, they sized the music a lot. They was like, the music in this, because he's driving and he can only listen to an iPod and only to in order to drive the way he does, because he's Baby Driver. And I was like, all right, you know, I see what you're doing with this, but it just seemed like Atomic Blonde handled it more effortlessly. It just seemed like it was just, oh, this is a thing that we're doing, and it's not, we're not sizing it. We're just putting it out there. We're just saying, like, this is what it is. This is the soundtrack that we using, and this is it. And she was kicking ass, and this is a movie, and I'm not a huge action movie fan, but I like that style of action. You know, you could really see somebody getting fucked up. And you're getting hit, like she takes somebody down, and it takes a lot to take somebody down. And not when you're just like shooting somebody, because yeah, she shot some people, but it was still like, yo, this is brutal. I don't remember seeing too many. I don't remember seeing, and granted, every year, every decade, every few years, you know, the technology gets better and the stunt people get better. And so you're able to do more things. So this is part of that evolution, I guess, where you're seeing these terrific fights, and it's just like you can feel it. It's like like a visceral thing where it's stylized like a Kill Bill. That's a different type of thing, but it's not. And Tarantino, you could feel what the bride was going through, and you had empathy for her and you care about. So he was doing that work. But just as far as like the brutality of the fights in Atomic Blonde, they were just like, oh, like you could just really feel it, like what was going on. And it was gritty, you know, the grays and in the cinematography, the bright colors, the little lesbian, and then the lesbian makeouts. Oh, God, like the bed sex was okay, like, yeah, this is sexy or whatever, but the scene where she has that chick up against the wall, I was like, oh my God, this is, oh yes. Like, I was like, wow. And I'm not into like girl on girl porn really, but I mean, I was just into, like, I was like, oh my God, these women are, it was just, so good. I had to mention that, you know, but it's an entertaining flick. And, if you just want to see something and be entertained, definitely go see it. You know, Charlize is a great actress. She's an Oscar winner, and there's some twists and turns in it. James McAvoy is good. He's always good, man. After Split, man, it's almost like he can do no wrong. And he, you know, he was solid. He just did it. He did his part, man. So, Atomic Blonde, I recommend it. And I also recommend you going over to the Patreon page and checking out episode 231. Check out my thoughts on Columbus. Check out Indie Movie Corner. All right, guys. So thanks so much for listening. Thanks for in advance for joining Patreon. Shout out to Victor and Dre. Appreciate y'all for being being at the ground level. And talk to you next time. Peace.